So we're on Daf Chavav Omer Aleph, and we're learning the sugya of Peiros Shviyos. And we started a long story here about Reish Lakish and his attitude towards the Kohanim in terms of Shviyos. Okay. We'll see as we go along what Reish Lakish has to say. So first of all, let's make sure that we all have the place. We're about, shall we say, halfway through the Amud, and yeah, Baruch Hashem. Thanks. Okay. So exactly where we are, let's see, would you say it's halfway through the Omer? We want to start with Rabbi Chiya Bar Zarnuki. Do you see the Tosis Li'akel? Yeah? If you see the Tosis Li'akel on Chavav and Aleph, then you drop like two lines below that. So there are two of the gigantic scholars, and their names are Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shimon, and they're on the way to a place called Asya, and we'll see about that in just a second, in order to be Ma'abra the Shana, and Reish Lakish is going to join them. Reish Lakish sees it as a wonderful opportunity to learn and study the laws of Ibur Shana. Now, let's make a few points here. First of all, we have a comment here that the reason why this Gemara and this whole story of Reish Lakish has been placed by the editors of the Shas, Ravina Ravashi, here at this particular juncture is because, thank you so much, we just finished learning that when the king demanded, even on the Shviyas year, because he doesn't care much about Shviyas, that we bring a tax from the payrolls, we allow the people to work the land. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. That was what we learned about yesterday, the very last Gemara here. And this case, this story here, is going to also shed a light on this heter that the Chachamim allowed us to work the land during Shviyas because of the Arnona. Now, as far as Ibur Shana is concerned, there are two parts to the process of Ibur Shana. Part number one, stage number one, is what's called Cheshbon. Cheshbon means that the Dayanim have to make a calculation. There are many different reasons why they would decide to add an extra month. And they have to make that decision after a great deal of deliberation. And that's a sugya that we learned earlier in Masechet Sanhedrin on Daf Yud Aleph. And then finally, after all the considerations, if they see that there's room and reason to be ma'abra the shana, there's a fancy word in English for that, I forget what it is, something with incalculation or what it's called?
Intercalculation.
So in such a case, they will actually hand down a verdict, a decision, and that's stage number two, and declare the year to be a shana mu'baris. Now Rashi learns that this group of Tanoim, of Amoraim, that was headed up by Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shimon, were on the way to be Ma'arba the Shana. But where did they end up? They end up in Asya. Now Asya is in Chutzlar. It's a Tosis, Dibra Maskel La'aber, if you take a look, is bothered by this question, and that is, how is it possible that they would be Ma'ar the Shon in Chutz Laretz? We have a principle in the Gemara Baba Basra that Ein B'Avmas HaShonah B'Chutz Laretz. Furthermore, we have a principle in the Gemara here in Sanhedrin Daf Yud Beis that we learned that Shviyas itself could not be a year that would be extended. There's no extra. There are all sorts of reasons for that, but there's no extra month of Adar in Shviyas. Satosis answers that there were certain political pressures, we don't know exactly what they were, that forced them to gather and convene in Chutzlarts in Asya, and that's And that's where they were involved in the first stage of the two-stage process, namely cheshbon. In other words, that's where they were going to deliberate back and forth. Is there a valid need for Ibur Shadur, which they would only institute the following year? And Reish Lakish, what Reish Lakish is really excited about is the opportunity to learn about the cheshbon, about the deliberation, about how they went about deciding whether there should be Ibur Shadur. However, the Meiri learns that they really went to Asya to be Ma'arba the Shana. And he asks the question to Tosfos, how could it be there's no Ibur Shadur in Chutz Laretz and Asya is in Chutz Laretz? So he answers that there's another principle called Lohinichu Kamosam Ba'aretz, meaning if all the Gedolim, all the greats of that generation are in Chutz Laretz, and no one on their level is left in Eretz Yisrael, then the second tier Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael did not have the power to be Ma'arba the Shana, but that power is now transferred over to the Chachamim in Chutz Laretz. So the Meiri says that there is in fact a possibility of being Ma'arba the Shana in Chutz Laretz, and that's called Lo'inichu Kamosam Ba'aretz. However, how could they be Ma'arba the year of Shvius? So to answer this question, the Yad Ramah says the following, that Ibru es Hashana b'Shvius Kevan Shesavru Keman Diomar B'daf Lamed Beis B'daf Yud Beis, right, that's the Sugya of Ibru Shana here in Sanhedrin Yud Beis, Shemutali Abru es Hashana b'Shvius. That although there is a school of thought, and that's how it seems to be the majority view, that we're not Ma'abra the Shana in Shvius, but there is one opinion that you're allowed to be Ma'abra the Shana in Shvius. If all things are equal, we would avoid it, but under certain circumstances, if need be, we could be Ma'abra the Shana in Shvius. Now, on their way, they meet a person, or they see him from a distance maybe, and guess what? He is working the land, and it's a year of Shvius. He is actually doing Kareva, which is the Aramaic of Harisha. So he's actually plowing his field, and it's Shvius. And Reish Lakish turns to the Chachamim, to Rabbi Chiya and to Rabbi Shimon, and he says, I think what I'm looking at is a Kohen who is plowing his land during Shvius. You have to do something about it. You can't just silently walk by and with blinders on your eyes as if you didn't see it. You have to give him a tochacha, you have to object. So as you know, there's a book called the Sefer Ha'aruch. It was written by Rabbi Nosson Ha'aruch. He's already one of the early Rishonim, perhaps one of the late Gaonim. So we're talking about a period of time even before Rashi. And he writes that Reish Lakish didn't say, this guy's a Kohen. He didn't know that he was a Kohen. You can't see, he doesn't have his name on his lapel, Joe Kohen. He thought maybe he's a Kohen, and he thought he's probably a Kohen. And why did he think he's probably a Kohen? So if you recall that yesterday we mentioned the principle that Nechshedu Kohanim al Hashvius. And again, we're going to have a whole discussion why Kohanim were not careful about the observance of Shvius. And how far do we go with this? Do we really believe that a Kohen would violate Shvius? So again, we'll have to wait 5 minutes to get back to those questions. But just in an abstract sense, the principle is Nechshedu Kohanim al Hashvius. And therefore, Reish Lakish assumed that probably he was a Kohen. The Yad Ramah refuses to accept the Aruch, but rather he says that Reish Lakish knew that he was a Kohen. Somehow he knew it. Maybe he recognized him. I don't know. And the Yad Ramah says the following. Lekach, therefore, Omar Lehem, he said to them, he's a Kohen, because I know he's a Kohen. And he asked them, Eich henicho solachrosh, how would they allow this person to do the Harisha? And he thought that maybe they allowed him to do the Harisha because of the Arnona. You remember the Arnona situation where the king demanded that we give the whatever percentage of our produce. However, according to the logic of Reish Lakish, listen carefully, this is an amazing chiddush of the Yad Ramah, even though technically There was no Iser in doing the Harish and all the Avodas HaKarka during Shvius after Arnona, because the Chacham allowed you to in order to avoid whatever we discussed yesterday. But nevertheless, they shouldn't have allowed him to do this Harish. And why not? Because he's a Kohen. Now listen carefully. What we're saying is that every Jew who's a non-Kohen is allowed to do Avodah during Shvius after Arnona, after the king's decree. But a Kohen is to be left out of that heter. Why? Because since Kohanim are chashudim ala Shvius, we can't allow them this license and this permission to work the Sada. Because we have to worry about the following. That maybe when he's working the karka, he's not doing it because Arnona. He's not worried about Arnona. He's doing it because he couldn't care less about the Iser of Kedushas Pero Shvius or the Iser of Avoda B'Shvius. And therefore, Yesh Lachshosh, we should be worried. She'im Yashiru Lo Yisharu Lo Peros, if let's say after he finishes his Avoda, which technically he's permitted to do because of Arnona, and then he pays up his taxes, he still has a surplus of Peros, he's going to sell them on the open market because he's not interested in Shvius, he's not careful about Shvius. So again, for any other Jew, we're going to allow them to do the Avodas Karka and produce and produce the produce during Shvius because of Arnona, but we're going to assume that after they pay up the Arnona, they're not going to do Schor, they're not going to do business with the remainder of the produce. So let's say the king collects, you know, he takes 20% of their produce, so they still have 80%, and what are they going to do with that 80%? Well, they're going to invite the Aniyim to take the 80%. No. We have to worry that maybe they'll sell it on the market. So here's where Reish Lakish made a difference between the Kohanim and the rest of Klal Yisrael. The rest of Klal Yisrael, you could trust them. They were very meticulous and observant in Shvius. And therefore, we're going to allow them to work the land. And what are they going to do with the payrolls of the land? Well, 20% they're going to give to the king for Arnona. And the other 80%, they will eat, or they will invite the Aniyim to eat. They'll do whatever you have to do. They will not sell those pears on the open market. But Kohanim, in whose eyes the whole enterprise of Shvius was Kal, they didn't take it seriously. We cannot let them do the Avoda and produce the peros and assume that the remainder, after they pay the Arnona, they're going to be Mekayim, the mitzvah of Shvius. We're afraid that they'll sell them on the market, and they'll violate the Iser Schar. So this is a fantastical approach. I mean, it's really, you know, it's like when we used to take English literature. So, I had one very good professor of English literature. I read the story. I didn't see anything of what he saw in the story. You know, it's like, I read this Gemara. I mean, this is very creative, a whole story here about Reish Lakish, in which Reish Lakish told the Chachamim, Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shimon, that they should put a stop to this. They must object to the Kohen doing the Avodah. Why? Because he's a Kohen. How do I know he's a Kohen? Because I recognize him as a Kohen. But a Kohen is Choshed al Shvius. We suspect him of violating Shvius. He's laid back about Shvius. You cannot allow him to do the work and produce.
We're Choshed Kohen.
Yeah.
For that. Usually, I
we're going to get to.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so that's the next 5 minutes to try to understand why Kohanim are Chashudim al Shvius. Okay, so for now, just give me the slack here, 5 minutes. We're going to assume it as an axiom. Okay. I feel like I'm giving a Daf Yomi Shir. You know, you'll ask your question a little bit later. You know, say, you know, if you give a Daf Yomi Shir and you have to talk 50% faster than you can physically talk, and then somebody asks you an intelligent question, say, oh, hold your question.
That's for you.
Yeah.
When the Chachamim put it, it's just of every person that they see somebody Chorish, their responsibility to stop them or whatever.
You're asking an interesting question. For this, we'd have to know a little bit more about Shvius, but it seems that the Beis Din was really in charge of supervising Shvius. There were so many infractions, and there were so many violations of Shvius that Beis Din had a responsibility to make sure that this shouldn't become rampant behavior. Even today, by the way, we have, I'm not telling you whether Shvius is Doraisa today, probably it's only Darabanan, but still, you know, there are many people who are very lenient about Shvius. Okay. Yeah. Oh. So Amru Lo, So what do the Chacham respond to Reish Lakish? Why aren't they getting involved? Yachal Lomar, if we would tap this guy on the shoulders, on the back, and ask him, hey buddy, did you forget it Shvius? He would tell you the following, Agiston ani betocho, which basically means, I'm not translating the words, but what it means is that there's no violation of Shvius. I'm allowed to do Harisha, but not because of our Nona, as we discussed earlier, but for a different reason entirely. And Rashi says the reason for this is that I am a Sachir, and this field is owned by a guy. I am just a hired worker. You know, I'm paid a salary for plowing the land, and it's not my own land. And if it's not my own land, and it belongs to a guy, then we paskin that yesh kinyan liakum, that a piece of karka, even in Eretz Yisrael, if it's owned by a guy, there's no iser shvius. Then Rashi offers a second pshat. And Rashi says it could be that the field is owned by a Jew, but this particular, we'll call him a Kohen, right, is hired to do the work. But we're talking after our Nona. So that the word agiston, which means sachir, I'm a hired laborer, in this context could mean one of two things. I was hired by the owner of the field as a guy. Or it means that even the owner of the field himself would have been allowed to do this work because of our Nona. And that second shot of Rashi would reflect what we saw earlier in the name of the Yad Ramah, that Reish Lakish held that even if there is a heter for every other Jew who's a non-Kohen to work the land during Shvius because of the Arnona, nevertheless we should not allow the Kohen to do so. Now, it sounds to me that according to Rashi, the Chachamim disagreed with Reish Lakish on a very fundamental point. Reish Lakish assumed that the Kohanim are so laid back about Shvius that we can't even trust them, even when there's Arnona, because they're going to take the surplus of the fruits after they paid off the tax, and they're going to sell it on the open market. The Chacham never accepted that. So the fact that this person who's doing the Harisha is a Kohen, according to Rashi's second shot, that didn't bother the Chachamim. There's a Heter Arnona, and the Heter Arnona applies straight across the board, including Kohanim. We don't have to be Choshed the Kohanim, that they will sell Peros Shvius. And that's going to lead us to a very fundamental issue about whether we should be Choshed the Kohanim or not. In Rashi's first shot, it could be that the Chachamim would agree to Reish Lakish that we should be Choshed the Kohanim. But in this case, if the Kohen is working in a field that's owned by a guy, according to Rashi's first pshat, then there is no Issa Shvius at all. So what are we going to make a big stink about it and complain and, you know, report him to the authorities, why are you doing Harisha during Shvius? The answer is, he doesn't own the field. Now if you take a look at Tosis, Divya Maskel Agiston,
he doesn't like that.
Tosis asks the following question on Rashi. He says, in Rashi's first pshat, this Kohen is a Sacher, he's working as a laborer, hired labor, hired help in the field of a guy. Well, guess what? We have, at least according to one view in the Gemara Gittin, an opinion that says, Ein Odrim im Nachri b'shvius. What do you say? Odrin is another word for Harisha. It's a different form. It's called Idur. It's a different form of Harisha.
Is it like a hoe?
A hoe instead of a rake or something like that. So for that you'll learn either Masechta Bar Katan or Masechta Shabbos, and we can talk about Idur. But what's going on here in this Tosfos, and what did Tosfos find in the Gemara in Gittin? So let's go slowly. We have a principle called Ein Odrim Im Hanachri B'Shvius, which means that even though technically this Sada is owned by a guy, the Chachamim said you should not work the field of a guy during Shvius as a laborer. And therefore Tosis is forced to accept Rashi's second pshat that the issue here and the heter here, which is what the Chacham responded to Reish Lakish, don't get excited and upset, is Arnona. Now this Tosfos that we have here cannot really be understood fully unless we add what's called the Tosfos HaRosh. You know that the period of the Balei HaTosfos lasted for centuries, and different Rishonim had different versions and different manuscripts of the Balei HaTosfos. So the Rosh, who's a little bit later than Rashi, the Rosh had his version, his manuscript of Tosfos. That's called the Tosfos HaRosh. Says the Tosfos HaRosh that what Rashi means here in his first pshat, and the reason why that principle of Ein Odrim Anochi B'Shvius is inapplicable, is that the Yisrael is Chocher Me'agoyes HaSodeh B'Kach V'Kach Kurim L'Shona, which means that in a sense, I'm going to use a word here, which again, it could be that the Tosfos HaRosh would object to this word, but just for our purposes, just a generic term called shutfus. It means that the Yisrael was a part owner in the field. Again, the field was owned by a guy, but the agreement, the nature of the agreement between the guy who owned the field and the Yisrael who's working the field, is that the Yisrael is considered like a part owner, which is otherwise known as a chocher, in which what happens is his payment, the way he chips into the shutfus is by doing the work, and what he gets out of the shutfus is X amount of produce. So they're going to divide up the produce, and part of the volume of the produce will belong to the owner of the field, who in this case is a goy. The other part of the produce will go to the Yisrael. Says the Tosfos HaRosh, V'tiru lo lavod, we're going to allow him to work during Shvius, even though he's, so to speak, a partial owner of the field, and that's to allow the Yisrael to organize his stature, his status as a chocher, as a kind of a sharecropper, so that he can make a parnasa, and he will achieve through his avoda X volume of the produce. So really, according to Tosfos HaRosh, although there's an iser of ein odrim in anochri b'shvius, here's the exception to the rule. Why? Because we're not going to, just one second, we're not going to consider him as a shutaf. Why? Right. Here's the deal. According to Tosfos, Ein Odrim Manochri B'Shvius means that either Al Pi Emes, or at least in the eyes of the spectator, it looks like the Yisrael is a part owner of the field. Once the Yisrael is a part owner of the field, then if he does the work on the field, then that's a violation of the Iser Shvius, because he owns the field, no less than the guy owns the field. But Rashi, says the Tosfos HaRosh, holds that in this particular arrangement, we don't view and define the Yisrael as a shutaf, as if he owns part of the field, but rather this is simply a way, as a sharecropper, that he could collect and be paid in the with the produce itself. So that fundamentally, there's no assumption on our part that the Yisrael is a shutaf in this field. Do you follow my point? In other words, we have to really decide, Ein Odrim Ananochi B'Shvius, when, at what point does it look like, and maybe it is, and it is so, that the Yisrael has ownership in the field, and therefore there's an Iser of Avodas Shvius. At what point? And Rashi is learning in his first pshat that what the Yisrael is going to claim, when I say Yisrael in this case he's a Kohen, but what the Jew is going to claim is that really the field is owned by the guy entirely. We have an arrangement of Yisrael chocher me'agoyes hasodeh, but really it's not that he owns the field itself or any part of the field, and he's not a shutaf, because if he was a shutaf, you see, I don't know how far I'm going to get into this. This is really, shutfus works in two ways. One way of shutfus is that everybody owns the entire thing. Both shutfim are owners of the entire field, let's say in this case, or whatever the object is, but in this case a field. The other way of shutfim is you own part of the field and I own part of the field. So let's say, for example, you'll plow the northern part of the field and I'll plow the southern part of the field. So Ein Ojim Anochi B'Shvius really addresses a case of shutfim. But what kind of shutfim? The kind of shutfim in which the Jew is working in part of the field. When he's working in that part of the field, basically he's the exclusive owner of that part of the field. So the principle that we mentioned earlier, Yesh Kinyan Li Akum, that the ownership of the Akum undermines the Isur Shvius, the Kedusha Shvius, that doesn't apply in a case of this sort of shutfis. Now, what would be if you had a classic shutfis in which everyone owns the whole field? I don't know. Maybe in that case, since the guy owns the whole field, there would be no kedusha shvius yesh kinyan liakum. I don't know. For that, we'd have to learn more of the sugyan gittin. But one thing I do know is that if they divide up the field and the guy does work in one part of the field, called the north, and the Jew does, you know, because he's also a shutfis, he does the work in the south in the other part of the field, that is a violation of Isur Shvius. The Gemara is pointing out here, I should say the Chachamim were pointing out to Reish Lakish, that in this case, the Kohen is not in violation of Isur Shvius because he's not a Shutav. He's a Chocher. Chocher means he's like a sharecropper. He's just doing the work in the field and he's being paid with the crops. You might think, well, if he's clearing off the crops, then clearly he's a shutuf in the karka. Nein, he's not considered a shutuf in the karka. So that's a tosa rosh. Again, I'm just giving you, you know, the tip of the iceberg here. Obviously, this is a much more complicated sugya. Now the Meiri accepts Rashi's first pshat, and he offers three answers to Tosas' kasha. Again, let's just go over Tosas' kasha. The Gemara Gittin says, Ein ojim imanochri b'shvius. So how can we say that since this karka is owned by a guy, therefore the Yisrael is allowed to work the land? Says the Meiri, we're talking in Surya. Surya, which is to the north, outside the northern bounds of Eretz Yisrael, was conquered by David HaMelech, if you recall. And there, the Isur Shvius is only Durabonon. So the fact that, again, according to the Meiri's understanding, the onlooker thinks, hey, this Jew is working the land and he's an owner of the land, he must be a partner in the land, because maybe the Jew doesn't realize he's just a sharecropper, he's just a paid laborer. The onlooker, the spectator, gets the misimpression that he is an owner, he's a part owner of the field. So the Rabbanan said, don't work in the field of a guy. People are going to think it's your field and you're violating Shvius. Again, it's another example of how far the Rabbanan went in the Isur Shvius. However, says the Meiri, they only went that far in the case of Eretz Yisrael proper. But if it's in Syria, the entire institution of Shvius in Syria is only the Rabbanan. And therefore the Rabbanan said, we're not going to aser this Ein Odrim Im Anochu B'Shvius, that Isur is not going to apply to Surya. Again, it's a kind of, if you remember what we discussed yesterday, Heimamru V'Heimamru. They created this Isur and they limited the Isur. So they decided that this Isur would not apply to Surya. So if I were to ask you the following question, Al Pidin, halachically, does Surya have the identical status as Eretz Yisrael proper? What would be the answer? No. And we see it here clearly from the Meiri. Again, that might not impress you, but if you're learning, for example, the Rama Hilchos Shvius, this is a Pella, this is a very great revolution, this Meiri, because you get the impression, the Rambam, that Surya has the same status as Eretz Yisrael. Why? Because the Rambam writes, at the beginning of Hilchos Trumas, the Rambam makes a point that David HaMelech consulted with the Sanhedrin. They gave him the approval to conquer land in Syria. And beyond that, says the Rambam, he consulted with the Urim V'Tumim, because to conquer Syria would mean to put Jewish soldiers' lives in danger. So he needed the okay and the guarantee of victory in the military campaign from the Urim V'Tumim. And the Rambam goes on to tell us that the expert in military strategy at that time was somebody by the name of Achitofel, and David HaMelech consulted with Achitofel. So basically, if you had a checklist as to whether or not we should go out to battle to conquer lands outside of the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, like Iran and Iraq and so forth and so on, so you could check off, says the Rambam, everything on the list. Everything that David HaMelech did to conquer the land of Syria was done kedas ukedid. But the Meiri says, nevertheless, Syria does not have the same level of kedushas Eretz Yisrael as Eretz Yisrael proper, the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael.
Kibush Yachid, I wouldn't say that anyway.
Okay, Kibush Yachid. Next, the second answer to the Meiri, I think, is something very similar to what we saw early in the Tosa Rush. Medubar afilu beretz Yisrael. I'll grant you that this whole story happened before they left on the way to Asia. But lo avdu, lo asru lavod besada shel goy, elim kein yeshutvis im agoy. Only if there's outright legal partnership. If the Jew has no partnership in the land, he's only being paid, and perhaps he gets a share in the crops. That's not an Issa Shviz. And his third answer is that this whole story took place after Churban Abayis. And with the Churban Abayis, the Rabbanan lifted the Issa of working in the Sada Shel Goy. And the reason for that is apparently, I'm just guessing, because now we lower the level of Shviz from that of Doraisa to Drabbanon. Now, exactly why that should happen because of Churban, I'm not 100% sure. L'chora, you need Rov Yoshvel Leos, so what he means by Churban here is Golos. I think that's what he means. I don't think there's a locha of Beis HaMikdash with regard to Shvius, because Shvius is not Kedusha HaMikdash. It's not Kodesh Mizbeach, it's Kodesh Gvulim. And it's probably not even Kodesh Gvul, and it's even less than that. But I think what he has in mind here is that there was a transition, a drop in the severity of the Issur Shvius, even in Eretz Yisrael, with Golos, once the people were exiled. Now this really touches on a major, major sugi. I don't know if we mentioned it here, called Kedusha Shnia, Kitchel Shaita, the Kidsha Lasid Lavo, which means that when Ezra and Nehemiah, together with the Oli Bavel, entered into the land of Israel and they settled it and they sanctified it for all mitzvah to his baritz, that sanctity was Me'ata Uliasid Lavo, from now and all future times, which means that even after the Churban of the second Beis HaMikdash, the Kiddush of Oli Bavel is still intact. But I think the answer to that is that although that might be true for many, many of the mitzvahs, like Truvas and Maisers, but it's not true for Shvius, because Shvius has a separate din that only when the land is settled by the Jews, then there's an Iser Shvius, Kedusha Shvius. But here, after Churban, the Jews were dispersed, and therefore there's no Shvius Doraisa. Now, I don't know exactly how to understand the Marsha here on this sugi. The Marsha somehow takes the word agiston and reinterprets it. And he says the following, that according to Rashi's second pshat, that we're talking about Arnona, then there's a heter to work in this field because of Arnona. And he says we don't have to interpret the word agiston as referring to a sachir, because even the Baal Bais himself is allowed to work the land for the purpose of Arnona. So that if you translate the word agiston as a sachir, as a laborer, as opposed to an owner, then you're going with Rashi's first pshat, which means that if there's Jewish ownership over this field, then it's also to do the work in the field. But if you go with the second pshat of Rashi, that we're talking about the period of Arnona, that means that even the owner of the field would be allowed to do the work. So then, agiston, ani betocho, I don't know exactly how the Marsha interprets the word agiston. Agiston means I'm just a laborer, but it doesn't mean I'm a laborer as opposed to an owner, that somehow you could use the word laborer even though you're the owner of the field. But here we get to the main kasha, and that is all these answers of Agiston Ani Betocho, whether you take Rashi's first shot, whether you take Rashi's second shot, and Tosfos and the whole bit, this is all fine and dandy. And that would justify what this Kohen was doing. But how did Rav Chiya and Rav Shimon know that this really was the situation? Shouldn't they have tapped this Kohen on the back and said to him, "My high, why are you working the land? It's Shvius." And maybe he would have answered, "Well, I'm a laborer, I don't own the karka, it's after Arnona, and we're all allowed, even the landowner, I'm allowed to do the work." Let him justify himself. In other words, it seems that Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shimon, as opposed to Reish Lakish, was dan lekaf schus. You know what I mean? If let's say you have a suffix whether someone is violating an avera, the Torah says you should judge him favorably. But Reish Lakish is saying, "Well, you know what? Let's find out. You know, is it really true? You know, you're coming up with this whole." So that he quotes here in the Masifta a sefer called the Yad David, who writes that they didn't want to slow down their urgency or their voyage, I don't know, enterprise, whatever word you want to use, which was for Ibur Shana. And they had to make a decision. We can sit down with this Kohen, you know, enter into the field and interrogate him and see what's going on. I don't know exactly how long that's going to take. Maybe it'll take an extra half hour. I can't tell you. Or we could go on towards Asya in order to fulfill this great mitzvah of Ibur Shana. Now, Rabosai, the Masifta doesn't tell us exactly why the Chachamim made this decision, but let me ask you, what would be your knee-jerk response if you had this choice, either to, you know, enter into this guy's field, sit down and interrogate him, delay your trip for the great mitzvah of Ibur Shana, or to overlook and make, you know, and let's focus on Ibur Shana. Let's get to where we have to get to. What would you think might be the reason why the Chachamim decided, let's lose up it, let's drop the ball, let's just go on and be Ma'arba the Shana? Anybody have a knee-jerk response to this question?
I'm Israel, to express an observer.
Excellent. Yeah. What else? Can you give me another answer? Osek b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah. Maybe they were on the way to a mitzvah. Now, here's where you have to ask a couple of questions. Question number one is, Osek b'mitzvah means if I'm sitting in Asya with the Chachamim, that's the mitzvah of Ibur Shana. Here they're on the way. So for this we have to know a Gemara where? Sukkah Chafei. The Gemara says that even when you're on a way to do a mitzvah, we still apply the principle of Osek b'mitzvah, and that's derived from a pasuk who left the Chabad Derech. And if you look at the sugya in Sukkah, the Gemara is talking about someone who's holech lekabel pnei rabo beregel, and he's part of the mitzvah of Sukkah. And the Gemara applies the principle of Osek b'mitzvah. So even though he's halicha, he's only on the way to a mitzvah, he's parted from a mitzvah. But you have to ask yourself another question. Does Osek b'mitzvah, parted from a mitzvah, apply in a case where an avera comes into play? Meaning, I'm involved in a mitzvah, so I'm not going to look to the left and the right. I'm totally, you know, focused, uniquely obsessed or focused on this mitzvah exclusively. But what's going to happen is that avera is going to be committed as a result of the fact that I'm osek b'mitzvah.
But it's a suffix. You don't know that.
Oh, okay. Good, good, good. Gosh, you're a step ahead of me. Beautiful. But I just wanted to explain my question. My question is that if there's a violation of the Isur Shvius involved over here, I doubt if the principle of osek b'mitzvah, patur min mitzvah, would apply. You could say that even if there's an avera, but the mitzvah of Klal Yisrael, of Ibur Shana, with all its implications, takes precedence. I don't know. That has to be understood. But if you're talking about Osek B'mitzvah, I don't know that Osik B'mitzvah, even if I assume that Halicha V'derech is called Osik B'mitzvah, if that's going to knock off and trump a Los Aseh, a violation every second that he works the karka is another violation of the Iser of Shvius. But I think what Rav Gershon is saying is the right answer to all our questions, and that's called Havidonis Chaver L'Kaf Schus. That if there's a Suffolk, you don't know if he's violating the Aver or not, and you have some consideration here. Now again, on the one hand, you're the Chachamim, you represent the leadership, the supervision, you're responsible, and therefore it would be naive on your behalf to say, well, let's be Danim L'Kaf Schus. You have to know for sure that the violation of Shvius is not being implemented. But on the other hand, if you have a Chishuv, you have some sort of halachic consideration, then you would apply Avidanis Chaver L'Kaf Schus, even if you're responsible for a possible Avera. In other words, Kedushas Karka of Eretz Yisrael is something that the Chachamim have to be concerned about. They can't just say, well, it's his Avera, I don't care. And they can't even say Avidanes Chaver L'Kaf Schus, you know, just because we want to assume he's a good guy, he was probably just an Agiston. But in a case, says the Meiri, where he's on his way, not the Meiri, the Adavid, excuse me, where he's on his way to do a great mitzvah like Yibur Shana, then the principle of Avidanes Chaver L'Kaf Schus becomes paramount. Now we're continuing on the journey. It's like Gulliver's Travels, right? Su chazielahu gavra. On the way, they see another person. Avi kosach becharme. Kosach means he was pruning. In Hebrew, that's called zomer. And zomer has the same halacha, the Gemara tells us in Moikotin, as notea. And you're not allowed to plant a field during Shvius. You're not allowed to prune a field. Or let's say in this case a kerem, it was a vineyard during Shvius. Amar lahem, Reish Lakish turns to them and he says, Kohen, Vizomer, are you going to allow this Kohen and look the other way? And he's violating Shvius by doing Zomer. Once again, we're going to have to know how Reish Lakish knew he was a Kohen. Either he recognized him, which is a little bit odd that he knew all the Kohenim here on the way out of Eretz Yisrael to Asya. Or alternatively, he suspected that a Kohen was Choshen al HaShviyas. And here we're not going to apply the principle of Hevidanis Chaver L'Kaf Schus, that Aver is being done, and we have to make sure that the Kedush HaShviyas is upheld. Amru lo yachol lomar lakel beis habad anitzorah. Now we have a number of questions here. First of all, why didn't they give the same answer that they gave before? That he's going to claim he's an Agiston, which means either that the karak is owned by a guy, or alternatively, it's during the Arnona period. And question number two is, what is Lakel Beis Habad Anitzar? What's that all about? And why would that be allowed during Shvius? So first I want to read to you the Hebrew translation of Lakel Beis Habad. There's something called a Beis Habad. What they did in the Beis Habad is Hayumenichem Es HaZesim Barema. So they gathered together after they harvested the olives. Did I say grapes? I meant to say olives. And they put it in a great pile. So you have a great pile of olives. Umenichim aleihem, they need a certain weight that should rest upon this massive amount of olives. Korah, a certain board that's made of wood, I suppose, but a very heavy wood. Lemaich es hazesim, and the weight pressing on the zesim would give us the oil that we want to get out of these olives. So what's the akel? The akel zeh, this akel is some sort of a utensil, a kli. Nitzrach, it is required. Why do we need it? Lahakif es azesim. It was some sort of utensil that surrounded the olives. Kidei shelo yazuzu bimkomon. It would, I don't know, in English, how would you say it when you have some sort of utensil that keeps something in place, you know, keeps it fixed? It's a receptacle that makes sure that it doesn't jump in one direction or another. I'm sure there's a word for that in English. So that's what he calls Kadesh Lo Yazuzu Mimkomo Tachas HaKora. In other words, as you press down with this Korah, the Zaysim start flying in each direction because it's a compact pile. So you need an Akel in order to prevent the Zaysim from getting out of hand, because we need that they should be under the Korah. Now that's all based on Rashi here in Masechta Sanhedrin, but Rashi in Masechta Avodah Zarah has a little bit of a different twist as to what this Akel is. And he says in the name of the Gaonim, Rav High Gaon, that Li'achar Schitas HaZesim, we're talking about a much later period of time in the process of making oil, of producing oil. They've already taken out the oil. Now, once you take out the oil, you've extracted the oil, what are you left with? What is the status of the Zaysim after you extract the oil? In fancy Gemara language, it's called Gefes. You know, you have to learn Masechta Shabbos and Perikira. Gefes, Gimel, Pei, Tav.
How's it different
from the Psoles? Oh, exactly. That's the Psoles of the Zaysim. Now, the sediment of the Zaysim after the after the Korah had sat and pressed the olives, those so-called psoles still have some vestige, some shirayim of oil in it. So we don't want to throw those out. So what do? They gather together the sediments after they've already been pressed of these olives, and they put them into a kli, into a utensil. And they're going to really do a new process of pressing grapes, but in this case, pressing sediments. Again, they're going to take a korah, and they're going to try to get any vestige of oil. Oil is a very expensive commodity. Now, where did they put the sediments? The sediments do not form this gigantic arema, and they don't need, you know, there's such a massive korah. The operation is a little bit, you know, low profile. So they need a certain kli. That kli would hold on to the sediments for the secondary process of pressing, and that kli was called an akel, ayin kuf lamed, that we see here in our Gemara. And Rashi goes into detail in the name of Haigo and exactly how they made this kli. It was actually produced with what we call klia v'sirug. In other words, it looked like a net. Like, you know, a net where you catch fish or other kinds of tzeda or birds and so forth and so on. What they do is they take different kinds of garments or fibers and they do klia. Klia is, in fancy English, is called braiding. Right? Braiding. So it goes in and out. So it's this beautiful kli that is, so to speak, it's like embroidered or woven from different pieces of cloth, and that was sufficient to hold on to the psolus of the zaysim, the gefes, and then they would put this low level or low profile korah and try to get out more from this. So this is all a whole explanation of the etymology of the meaning of the word akel, or li'akel. So again, in the first pshat, which is Rashi here, it was the kli that kept the zaysim from running away from the korah in a contained area. And according to the second pshat, it was a kli that was used to hold the sediments, which were then pressed inside this akel. Okay, now we get to the main question. Why is this mutter on Shvius? So again, Zomer means he was pruning. So he took off and cut off branches from the vine. Now, when you cut off branches, what happens? Anybody know? I mean, if you learned a little bit of Shabbos or Moed Cut, you'll know what I'm talking about. It improves the productivity of that agricultural growth. In other words,
Pruning.
Pruning is beneficial. Now, anything that you do for the benefit of the karka is asur on shvius. So therefore, yesh lahakshos, all the Rishonim, including Tosfos, Divrei Maaseh Li'akel, ask the following, kevon shemaisa zeh umashbiach sakerem, harei u over isur shel noteya. Noteya means planting or or improving the productivity. As long as you do the improve the productivity, the produce, that's called noteya. And therefore, the Gemara says in Moed Katan and in Shabbos that Zomer es Karmo is considered noteya, and it's also during Shvius. Pruning is prohibited during Shvius. Not only that, the Gemara says, fascinating, that if you prune a tree on Shabbos, we have to kill you twice. Now, we can't kill you twice because a person can't die twice. But it means if he did it b'shogeg, he has to bring two chatos for violating two different malachos. First of all, there's a malacha called zomer, which is a told of kotzer. And then there's a malacha called noteya, because zomer is a told of noteya. And why is it? Because it's much biach the kerem. By cutting off these vines, the kerem will produce more. So this guy, we'll call him Joe Cohen, is pruning his vineyard. And he's going to claim that I can do that? Why is that permissible? After all, that is notea, which is also doing shvius. Zomer is chai mishum notea. So Tosus answers that in this particular case, the zomer is actually mazik the kerem. Instead of improving the kerem, it actually is destructive of the kerem. The only reason he's doing it is because he desperately needs these branches to create an okel. Again, whether the okel is going to be that kli that surrounds the zesim, or in the first round, or the kli for the sediments, and so forth and so on, but he needs to create this okel, and he needs the vines. You know, it's like, I don't know if you ever had this experience. I have this all the time. I have to write myself a note and I can't find paper, you know. So what do? I grab a piece of paper. Then it turns out that this paper has on one side, which I didn't notice, plans for my wife's next job. You know, she's an interior designer. Oh no, you know, now I'm in deep trouble because I wrote what I have to take care of today on the back of that piece of paper. So what happened is he didn't have any access to an okel. The only thing that he had, he was desperate, was the branches of the vine, and he cut them prematurely, even before the vine was ready to have its branches pruned. And therefore, that pruning is not called notea. But then to get to the other question, why did the Gemara have to introduce the Akel Beis Habad? Why didn't the Gemara just say what it said before, La Gisto Nani Betocho? Maybe he's just a laborer, and the karka, the field, is owned by a guy.
Where's the shogeg involved? You say he gets two chatas.
Oh, in other words, he didn't realize it was Shabbos, and he went ahead and he pruned his tree, and he has to bring not only one chatas, but two chatos, because he violates both kotzer and meleches notea. Why kotzer? Because what they did with this, with when you prune the tree, you and I would have said, well, let's just throw it out in the garbage. Like, have you ever seen when they prune the hedges? You know, if you pay good money for a gardener.
Yeah.
So like my sister lives in a neighborhood where, you know, these, I don't want to go into details, but maybe they're Jewish, maybe they're not. But anyway, these are guys who were mega whatever back in the old country. I don't want to get too detailed because today if you say anything about it, you get into trouble. Uh-huh. Not that anyone cares about personal, but anyway, so these guys have massive hedges that are literally 20 feet high. And what happens is they pay a gardener to cut them. They're in perfect shape. Like every little twig is in place. Well, what do you do with those twigs that you prune? You throw it in the garbage, right? You throw it in the rubbish bin. But in the old days, they didn't throw out the branches that they pruned. They used it for firewood. So that's called kotzer, which Zomer is a told of kotzer. Kotzer is whenever you cut something off that you need. But in addition to what you need, you also benefit the karka in the case of pruning, and hence you chai for notay as well. So you have to bring two different chatos. And that has to do with the sugi called chiluk chatos, which you'll see if you're ever interested, is the first daf in Masechta Bava Kama, actually. So exactly why the Chachamim had to come up with this new explanation, and they couldn't suffice with the old explanation, that's something that we have to know. One second. Okay, so let's leave that question on the back burners. We'll have to come back to that. So Reish Lakish makes a cynical comment. Again, he doesn't understand why there's a mitzvah here as far as the Kohen and Shvius being done as Chaver Lekav Schus. He doesn't think that that should apply here in the case of a Kohen who's choshed on Shvius. So in a cynical comment, he looks at the word akel, or akal, and he reformulates that word. He says, Omar lahem halev yodea, who are you fooling here? We know what the Kohanim's relationship to Shvius is all about. And im li'akel, or li'akal, im la'akalkalos. Akalkalos means when you do something in a, you know, how do you say it in English?
Crooked way. You go around it.
So in other words, he may try to fool you and tell you, well, you know, he's not improving the karka, or he's only doing it in order to create this kli. But you and I know that he really wants to do zmirasa eitzim, and he is violating the das. So again, Reish Lakish is of the opinion that Havidanis Chaver Lekav Schus does not apply in this case, but Rab Chia and Rab Shimon would be Dan Lekav Schus. By the way, the Chafetz Chaim in Hilchas Lashon Hara, I just learned this second here, in this footnote, has a whole discussion about this Gemara in light of the principle of Havidanis Chaver Lekav Schus. And he says that if circumstantial evidence incline us towards Kafchova, then in a case where there's a possibility of an Avera, we should not be Danim Lekav Schus. But we have a chiyuv of tochacha. Very fascinating. We'd have to go through this Chofetz Chaim. This would be a shiur unto itself. You know, what happens if you have a head-on collision between two principles? One is hocheach tochiach in case he's violating shvius. The other is havidan lekav chaver lekav schus. And the Chofetz Chaim says that Reish Lakish felt that in this context, our main obligation is to give this man tochacha and stop him dead in his tracks before he continues to violate Shvius. And why is that? Because everything is nota lekaf chova, that all the indications have it that he is doing a violation. You want to come up with a dre and figure out that maybe he's going to say this and maybe he's that and maybe he's only a laborer. I don't see that. And the kohenim hachashudim al Shvius. So we don't know exactly what was the opinion or the counter-argument of Rabbi Chiya of Rabbi Shimon, but let's go on in the story. Hey, Amalu Bereisha, which one of these two incidents happened first? Ilema HaKamaisa Amalu Bereisha. If we assume that the first case historically in sequence was the Choresh, then Hanami lemru agiston ani betocho. Why didn't they answer the same answer in the second case of the Zomer that they did in the first case? Ela ha amar lehu bereisha. If we assume that the Zomer case happened first, v'hadar amaluhu hach, and then they encountered the choresh, this which is the opposite sequence that we have here. So then, in the case of the choresh, his Kavana was certainly for Avodas HaSodeh, and then you'd have to say that he was a Sachir, he was an Agiston. So again, the Gemara says that it makes more sense to assume that the first story took place first. And that's why the Gemara, in the second occasion, the Chacham had to answer Agiston ani betocho. If the first case would have happened first, in the case of a Zomer, they should have said Agiston ani tocho, and then repeated that in the case of Choresh. But, I'm sorry, if we assume, just one second, let me just go over one more time, I'm sorry, I'm a little under pressure because I have the shiur that I have to fill in for Rabbi Myers. Hey, Amalu Bereisha, Ilei Mahaka Maisa, Amalu Bereisha. If you're going to say that the Choresh happened first, then Hanami Lemu Agiston Ani Betocho. Why, in the second case of the Zomer, didn't they give the same answer to the Chachom that he's only a laborer? Ella, but rather, if we assume that Amalu Bereisha, that the Zomer case happened first, and in the case of the Zomer, the Chachom say maybe he's only. Maybe only he's a Zomer that's not improving the Karka. And then we get to the second case, which is the case of Charisha. Here they couldn't give the answer that he's not improving the Karka, because Charisha is an absolute objective improvement to the Karka. Okay then? Now the rest of the sugi, which Amir Tzshem will pick up on Sunday, B'li Neder, is about why Kohanim are considered Chashudim on Shvius. Okay then? So I wish everyone a great Shabbos. And thank you very much. If somebody could be kind enough just to open the door, and hopefully...
Another person?
Yes?
What's troubling me about this is, isn't Rav Lakish's credibility being questioned here? Like, he knows this guy's a Kohen.
Yeah, there's going to be a whole battle against Reish Lakish. You and I don't even know how fierce this battle is going to be, because Reish Lakish was Choshed the Kohen.
Yeah.
And the Gemara is going to say why, you know, come up with some explanation why Reish Lakish was so extreme in his position.